This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
You know, people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
It's the Fenway Rundown on a Monday. Chris Cotillo here in Boston, Sean McAdam still in Seattle, and a little bit sleepless as he records very early on this Monday morning after a long four-game weekend series. You know, folks, we hate to complain about the job here at the Fenway Rundown, but I did get a text from my co-host over the weekend that said, I forgot how long four-game series are. It feels like I've been here for a week. So sounds like a guy who's excited to get home.
Yeah, it's a long trip out here, and as I said, the four-game series, there's just something about it that makes it seem a little longer, but it was, at the very least, a very interesting weekend for the Red Sox to kick things off. I think you and I might differ a little bit on the significance of that, and we can get into it, but, a good start, even though it's a 2-2 mark, which doesn't jump out at you, but I thought a good start for the Red Sox.
We had it covered, as you know, on the site, on the podcast. And is there a third way we had it covered by chance?
Not that I can remember.
The Fenway Rundown Insider Text Program.
Ah, silly me. The coffee hasn't kicked in here in Seattle. Yes, the Fenway Rundown Insider Text Program. I'm so glad you reminded me, Chris. An opportunity to keep current on all Red Sox news, to converse with the three of us, Chris Smith, Chris Cotillo, and myself, and to supply questions for mailbag editions. How can you join such a program? Very simply, by texting the word join to 617-751-6257, and then click the link to subscribe. That will get you a free 14-day trial period, after which you'll be charged $4.99 monthly.
So, programming note, as I said, Sean's coming home. I am home for the whole trip. Chris Smith goes on to Oakland and Anaheim. I'll be in Worcester at least once, maybe twice this week for some coverage there. Right in my backyard of where I grew up. So, always good to go to Polar Park, even though I think we might be getting a blizzard during one of the days I plan to be there. So, welcome to April baseball. All right, let's get into Seattle, the four-game series. You wrote it last night after the game, I think. Anybody with a brain would have also written the same thing. No offense. Starting pitching was a story. There's no two ways about it. I think the Red Sox came out, and on the area we thought they'd be weakest, were really, really strong across the board. It wasn't one good start. It wasn't two. It wasn't three. It was four. Again, only 2-2. They didn't go 4-0. They're not, you know, on pace here for 100 wins. But just when you have, you know, not just Bayo looking good and Pivetta, but Crawford and Whitlock, I think that was a very telling sign that they might, you know, have something with some of these pitchers. And, you know, I was a doubter all along. I think you were too. Again, one start does not tell the story of the season, but against a pretty good lineup on the road, they all pitch deep and they all pitch well.
Yeah, you said they're not on a pace to win 100, but I should point out that they are on a pace to win 81, which would be one shy of the 82 win total I had for them. Just wanted
and
to point that out.
One more than mine. So while I can. We're splitting the difference.
But you're right. Four quality starts with a 1.64 ERA between them. A lot was made over spring training about Alex Cora's remark that the rotation needs to provide a minimum of 25 innings every turn through the rotation. In other words, you've got to average 5 innings per outing from your starters. And they're doing a little better than that. They're averaging 5.5 through the first four turns through the rotation. We'll see what Tanner Houck brings Monday night in Oakland. But these were all excellent pitching performances. And another number that struck out at me, 1.64 ERA is one. Another is 27-1. That's the strikeout to walk ratio. It really is incredible that you could have 22 innings of pitching from your four starters in the series, and you issue all of one walk while averaging more than a strikeout per inning with 27. So all the signs are there. There's encouragement. I think that there's a little bit of we'll show them that is working to the benefit of this rotation. I talked to Reese McGuire after the game yesterday. He said that the constant drumbeat of sign Jordan Montgomery, sign Blake Snell over the spring kind of caught the attention of some of these guys. And it was sort of like, hey, yeah, those guys are good, but we're good too. And we're going to go out and show it. And through four games, they have.
Let's note that that constant drumbeat wasn't just from your reporters or media or fans. The best player on the team also said that. Talk about true motivation enough there, you know? And Kenley Jansen kind of alluded to that. We'll get to him in a minute. As you look at the four performances, did one guy stick out as the one who impressed you the most? To me, with this new arsenal and everything, I think Whitlock, you know, just because I guess, you know, he has not had too much success in the rotation in the past, and we've seen Bayo and Pivetta and Crawford pitch good games. This was one of his best major league starts. I don't think it's an over-exaggeration to say that. You know, I know he's had good ones in the past too, but like just he looked great yesterday. And, you know, if they can get either him or Hauk to be above average, that might be, you know, enough. I don't know if they even need both of them. That would be great for them if they could. But to me, I think he stood out as the guy. You know, Bayo was good. Pivetta was good, but he had, you know, has a lot of those games where he can dominate. Crawford, I think we all think is the upside. Whitlock, to me, stuck out.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I think you're right, because there was more unknown about Whitlock. I think people saw what Crawford was capable of doing last year. The question was, could he deliver more in the way of workload and innings? And for one start, at least, he did. And tellingly, I think some of his best stuff came over the last couple of innings. Everyone is focused on, well, what's he going to be able to provide from pitches, say, you know, 60 to 80, the final couple of innings where he would typically run out of gas. And actually he got better and I think had five of his last six outs were strikeouts. So he kind of finished with a flourish. The thing about Whitlock, as it sometimes is the efficiency. He was up to about 60 pitches in the first three innings, which is why he was limited to just five innings. He was at 80 or 81 pitches at that point. Nothing to be too alarmed about early on. I don't think that Alex Cora and Andrew Bailey are going to let these guys get to 100 pitches the first couple of times through the rotation.
They all pitched the same number, right? Wasn't it like 84, 84, 84 to
yeah,
start?
It was all in the low 80s. And, you know, that makes sense for some cooler weather out here. And first time out, you know, you don't want to ask too much of these guys. But, you know, one thing that we haven't talked about is that with one notable exception on the extra inning loss, the bullpen also performed extremely well. They had some rough going that night with both Joely Rodriguez and Justin Slayton struggling in the extra inning loss on Saturday. But the bullpen performed as you hoped it would. Scoreless in the Pivetta game, and just good performances up and down that bullpen from a lot of guys that we don't know a lot about. Greg Weissert, Isaiah Campbell, Justin Slayton making his major league debut on Saturday. Those are three guys that don't have a whole lot of track record. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, as I said, with the exception of a few pitches here and there, all of those guys performed exceptionally well. You know what you have with Martin. You know what you have with Jansen if he's healthy. We'll get to that in a bit.
Yes, we will.
But a lot of those guys.
And Winkowski was good too. Don't forget that.
Yep. Yep. But again, more of a known factor given that, you know, he performed well last year. But, you know, Weissert and Campbell are new to the organization. Slayton is new to the big leagues as well as the organization. And other than some struggles in Saturday night on the part of Slayton, you know, hey.
Can't blame him for that.
Right. Winning run on third, go get Julio Rodriguez and get us out of this mess. It's not exactly the way you want to draw it up for your major league debut, but he rebounded yesterday on Sunday. So, you know, kind of A's all the way across on the report card for the pitching staff.
Yeah, and the part we will get to, because that has been like 10 minutes of positivity, which might be a Fenway rundown record. That's a joke. That's just, you know, talking about how what people say we are. We'll give credit where credit's due. Saturday night was a lot of drama for the early season. If you watch the post-game show, you know, which you didn't because you were there, Tom Caron, Jim Rice, Lenny DiNardo sitting there talking about how that is just a horrible, horrible loss. It's the kind of loss that you don't want them to take into the next day. They didn't, you know, they probably had their best overall all-around game of the series in the finale. But Saturday did stick out for a variety of reasons. I think it was clear once Joely Rodriguez started warming that Kenley Jansen was not available. And I have some thoughts on this. So here we go. Number one, you know, Kenley Jansen is great for business for us. He's very candid. We had him on the show. We enjoyed it. But I think he put them in a really bad spot with this whole spring training thing. You know, basically a chart your own path spring training, which, you know, they wouldn't give that leeway to Greg Weissert or Zach Kelly or Justin Slayton or any of these guys. But this is a future Hall of Famer, potentially. 400 saves. Everybody knows it. You can do whatever you want. You can build up as you want. And it was the stop and start with the back and the lat and everything. And he told them, nope, I'm good to go. And three games into the season, slept wrong and wasn't ready. Like, it's kind of anti-Cora in a lot of ways, because Cora likes to, you know, baby's probably not the right word, but take these guys along slowly early in the year. You saw two games over the weekend where Devers didn't play because it was cold early in the year. We've seen time and time again, starters on pitch counts, you know, guys having early days off. And I think Jansen put them in a really bad spot. The other criticism here is, you know, we talked about this when we talked about the roster decisions the other day, like, okay, you know, whatever, does it really matter that Joely's on the opening day roster? Bernardino's going to be up and they'll shuffle these guys around. They just wanted to keep the depth in the organization. But as I'm watching Saturday and Joely, you know, does not look like a major leaguer, I'm thinking to myself, you know, if this is a team that is battling for, let's say, that third wild card spot and every game really, really matters, then you should have your best 26 on the roster. Depth be damned, all of that type of stuff. Like, you would want Bernardino in that spot over Joely Rodriguez 10 times out of 10 the other night. And he was in, you know, wherever, Lehigh Valley with Wister. Like, that to me just feels now even more like an overthink on the part of the organization. You know, I know everybody else in the bullpen pitched well, and that was the aberration of the weekend. But just two thoughts. Jansen put them in a really bad spot, and it's just bad roster management. And it cost you a game, you know, all that combined.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Joely part. I don't know why he's here. I know that they had the ability to option Bernardino and keep control of Joely Rodriguez. But is that really a big prize at the end of the day? You know, this is a guy that nobody else wanted over the offseason. He was here and injured for most of 2023. Sort of inexplicably, in my mind, they bring him back. He doesn't pitch particularly well in the spring. And then they have him make the opening day roster. You know, if he was going to opt out, then my attitude toward that would have been, hey, more power to you. If you think you can go get a big league deal elsewhere, we've seen you up close. Frankly, you know, we're not dying to get you on this roster. And yet that's kind of how they acted.
They were excited about signing him a year ago. They were aggressive with Heim around.
Okay, but what did he do in 2023?
Right, it was 11 innings.
Right. So
most of them bad.
And, you know, he was out there for everyone's taking this winter. And the best he could do was a minor league deal with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And for like him to threaten to opt out, I would have held the door open and said, good luck to you, because I don't see the appeal there. I'm a little different than you on Jansen in that while we can take, you know, we can question, you know, his readiness and preparation, ultimately the Red Sox determine who's on the roster, who's healthy, who's on the IL. You don't get to choose that if you're a player. And I'm not suggesting that they should make up phantom injuries and put players on the IL who don't belong there. But if a guy has battled both lat and back issues literally from the day after he arrived in spring training, and got four appearances for 3 2/3 innings. And there was this fire drill in the last week of spring training to get him ready and make sure he had a minimum of four appearances so they could claim to everyone, oh yeah, he's ready to go. What was the harm in losing him for the first two series? Backdate him 3 days, you miss him for seven. By the time you 12, get
pitchers 15.
Right. Excuse me. Yeah. Thinking of the other. Right. Even the opening trip, you're without him. You're pitching in cold weather in Seattle and Oakland with a bad back, with muscle issues, with soft tissue issues. Let him rest, throw on the side, build up, and be ready for the home opener. You know, that they were hell-bent on making sure that their closer was ready and on the baseline on March 28th, ready to go, and look where it got him through the first series. And how do we know that this isn't going to be an issue for a good chunk of the month as he deals with cold weather, as he tries to manage this back issue that could be, you know, let's face it, this is a big guy. He's 36 years old. This is unlikely to be, oh, he's fine now in 3 days and it's never going to crop up again. I didn't understand them being hell-bent on turning everything upside down just so they could have him ready for March 28th. So,
well,
I'm blaming the organization more.
Yeah, I mean, fine, we can go both there. But, like, the way they made it seem was Kenley will tell us when he's ready and then it's good to go because he's Kenley Jansen and he's, you know, one of the best closers ever. So he's just going to decide.
Well, but ultimately, the organization has to put the foot down and have the final say and the ultimate control. If you were to survey every injured player in the sport, they'd all tell you they're ready to go because they all want to compete, because they all want to be out there with their teammates. And
what about JD Drew? You cover JD Drew.
JD Drew was not ready to go in that first game in Tokyo.
No.
But with Jansen, you know, sometimes you have to step in front of the player and do what's best for the team, even though he tells you, yeah, I can make it work. Well, three games in, he couldn't. So whose fault is that?
And you know what? It hurts them from a competitive standpoint, and it also hurts them from a trade value standpoint, because neither of us think that he's going to be on this roster come August 1st. And that might be the case even if they're, like, not bad, because if you look at all these other guys, Slayton, Campbell, Weissert, you know, you'd still want to trade Kenley, you know, even if you're kind of in contention and any health issues.
Yeah, somebody else could emerge in the next 4 months that they think has closer type stuff and could step into that role. You're right. I don't think they're fixated on trade value on opening day, nor should they, but that is one more fallout from all of this.
Quickly on the position player side, four games. I think we both thought Casas and Story are going to have amazing years. I think that's probably, we still think they're going to have above average years. You know, the four games don't count. I wouldn't say worry about either of those guys for me. I'm sure you share that, not to, you know, get inside your mind, but it would be silly not to. There is a guy that I think both of us are fairly worried about, and it's Willie Abreu. The fact that he is struggling this much kind of across the board, the at-bats have not been good. They were not in spring training. And Tyler O'Neill has now homered twice and adds kind of an athletic element that maybe Willier doesn't. I think we were both surprised to see O'Neill over Willier Abreu in the lineup on opening day against a righty. They went with the hot hand and then, you know, kind of mixed and matched throughout the weekend. Willier Abreu better be careful here, because Tyler O'Neill could emerge as the everyday player, and that could be it. And he could be in AAA in a couple weeks. I didn't think we'd be at this point, but the spring was that way. The first 4 days were that way. Ref Snyder's going to come back. Not a lot of roster flexibility there. And, you know, I think the two position player stories, that and then Rafaela being excellent.
Yeah, on Abreu, it isn't just the at-bats, which weren't great and weren't great throughout much of spring training with a lot of strikeouts and a lot of contact issues, but it was errors and mental alertness. He overruns one of the singles in the bottom of the 10th inning, which leads to One of the runs scoring, the tying run scoring in the loss on Saturday. On Sunday, on a soft fly ball to right field, he barely gets back into first base to avoid being picked off. And then later at second base, to avoid being doubled up. And then later at second base is picked off. So, you know, it's one thing to have a 1-for-12 or whatever he was, excuse me, for the first four games. It's another to have focus issues, as he seemingly did over the weekend, charging a ball a little too hard that he didn't have to and misplaying it into an extra base, almost getting doubled up at first base on a routine fly ball to right field, and then being picked off second base scoring position. Those are things that can't happen mm-hmm. when you're trying to establish yourself and be part of this roster. If you're going to struggle a little bit, they'll be patient with you. They'll give you some time. But if your head's not in the game and you're making mental errors, then you're really putting yourself in a hole.
And I thought he'd be every day and O'Neill would be the fourth outfielder in large part because Tom Werner said the 400 plate appearances thing. You know, they have the depth in the outfield where they don't need to trot him out there every day. You know, they're facing a lefty tomorrow and Alex Wood. Sure, he won't play then. It's interesting to see if Cora goes with O'Neill here on the bookend of the series as well. And just quickly on Rafaela, I know you came away very impressed with him, kind of in all facets there too.
Yeah, some good at bats. You know, I thought the Saturday night game was sort of a nutshell of what you might be able to expect from Rafaela. Not every day, but at least focuses on his potential to impact the game in three different ways: on the bases, in the field, and in the batter's box. And that's what he did. He made a great sliding catch coming in to take away a base hit from, I think it was Ty France on Saturday night. On the bases, he advanced from second to third on a routine fly ball to left field. I think he caught the Mariners a little flat-footed there. That speed is going to play. And he also had a single and a double to help contribute offensively. So I think it's smart that they're hitting him down the lower third of the lineup, sixth or seventh most nights. He doesn't have the pressure of trying to get on base as one of the, you know, first or second guys in the order. He can kind of bring his offensive game around. I think there's still some issues with his swing decisions and plate discipline, but he managed pretty well over the first four games. And we know about the speed and the glove. Those are both plus, if not plus plus tools. And he's intriguing just because of his ceiling.
After 4 days, and you know, you watched every pitch because you were there. I actually watched most. I shouldn't say actually, that's part of the job, a big part of the job. So you should. Thursday night, as I tweeted, I was out watching college basketball. I don't know the results of those games, by the way, if anybody asks. The tournament's over. At least Duke's out. But do you think that, you know, as we wrap here, do you feel better about these Boston Red Sox than you did when you landed there, and by how much or no?
Yeah, to a certain extent, because of the starting pitching performances. I mean, all the other stuff we've touched on, you know, Abreu, questions about Abreu, praise for Rafaela, a big weekend for O'Neill. Those things are going to come and go. But let's face it, the question about this team is starting pitching and its rotation. And I know that the Mariners are not the 27 Yankees. And, you know, after Cal Raleigh and Julio Rodriguez and one other
guy. What was it like
guy,
covering them, by the way? Good?
It was excellent. They were a fun bunch. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you some babe stories later. Okay. But the Mariners are not a powerhouse team. They're not a great offensive juggernaut, but still, they're a major league team. They're considered a playoff contender in the American League West. And the fact that the Red Sox compiled a 1.64 ERA for those four games, you can't help but be positive about that. How long it lasts, whether it's transferable to better opponents, whether it's going to continue, all to be determined. But so far, you know, you have to think more and better of them than we did just 4 or 5 days ago.
Yeah, I mean, that point is definitely well taken. I do think, you know, as I texted over the weekend, people just kind of assume this offense is going to be right at the top of the league. And I've been high on Story. I've been high on Story for months. And Casas, but like, you know, one of those guys gets struggling. You know, Yoshida, we think, is probably slightly above average bat with a little higher ceiling, depending on how he's going. You know, O'Neill, there's a ceiling, but we don't know. Rafaela, same thing. Like, I just think that there are some holes in the lineup. And to me, not to go super negative, but just the fact they pitched that well over the course of 4 days and ended up 2-2. It's a little interesting. It wasn't 3-1. It should have been with that game on Saturday night. I'll end here. The positive thing for the Red Sox coming up, a lot of games against teams that they might be able to beat up on. We know about Oakland, the Anaheim Angels. I'm not old enough to say that. The California Angels, Los Angeles Angels, over the weekend, and then again next weekend. That's not a team that should really scare you. They seem to be, you know, as always, a disaster out of the gate. And then, you know, Cleveland, kind of a middling team in the American League. Pittsburgh on the schedule, obviously the Orioles at home. But there's a chance here to get to a point where they stack up some wins early. We'll have it all on the site. As I said, Chris Smith, Oakland, and Anaheim. And then the three of us will be back together for April 9th as the Red Sox face the Orioles. For the up-to-the-minute latest on the Boston Red Sox, be sure to subscribe to our Fenway Rundown Insider Text Program.
Text the word JOIN to 617-751-6257, then click the link to subscribe. That will give you a free 14-day trial period. We think you'll like it and be only too happy to contribute the required $4.99 per month charge thereafter.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.